Moncrief
with Energlaze
on News Talk.
087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for Parenting Afternoon.
Afternoon, Joanna. Sean.
First question is this. My 8-year-old son is a huge procrastinator. I will ask him to do a simple task, like brush his teeth or get his school jumper on, and we'll find him reading a book or playing with a toy instead, usually reading. It's so frustrating. He just says, I got distracted every time it happens. I feel like I can't trust him to do anything if I'm not watching, and it's causing so much friction in the house. I want to encourage the reading, of course, but how can I convey that some situations, like getting out of the house on time, require urgency, so sick of feeling out of control? Is he a procrastinator or is he just 8?
There's a lot of just being 8, but you know what you're describing here is a fast-paced home.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Come on, we're a timeline. It's urgent. Get moving. Everyone does their bit and we get out of the house on time. And you are doing that with a slower paced child in mind. He's not at your pace. And that could be who he is. It could be his personality. It's just his manner. But he needs extra time. So the rest of the house might operate like a fine-tuned machine. But this kid needs to be up 10 minutes earlier. He needs to everything have a little bit of a lead in so there is more wiggle room. So when you yell, have you got that jumper on? He can go, ooh, I absolutely don't, and still have time to do it because he's just going to need that. You're going to have to prompt him to do this. Another way, though, Sean, you could approach it is get like a big poster board, you know, just like a sheet of coloured large poster card, and literally take photos of him or draw pictures, depending on how artistically inclined you are or are not in the way you approach this. Print out visual steps. Take the morning, for example, because it's always a hotbed of tensions in busy houses. But you know, getting up, cereal, brushing teeth, getting dressed, you know, it's all written out or drawn out on the board. Hang it up and you can just say to him, did you check your board? Instead of brush your teeth, brush your teeth, brush your teeth, get your jumper, that you're having to do that. Because I think what's happening here is parents' frustration is going up at having to repeat themselves, at constantly having to check, and it's creating more work. But the expectation here, at least from this snippet we get, you know, is for your son to be the one to adapt to your preferred pacing and your preferred routine. And to do so with a high level of independence,
yes.
Go off there and do those jobs for yourself. This is not the child you have. Okay.
No.
It's not the child many of us have, by the way, but that's definitely not this kid. But I'm also going to suggest here that you learn to adapt and lean in towards him as a way of bringing him with you. Mm. So it's not I'm here, it's working. You adapt and come to my way. But you're saying, okay, we need more time. We need to slow this down. This is a child who gets distracted easily, who loves to read and is probably thinking about the story even when he's not reading the story. So that in itself is going to make brushing my teeth much slower than it maybe needs to be. I think I would do that. Increase the structure. Tell him 2 to 3 steps maximum at a time to do.
Yeah.
Upstairs, yeah. Brush your teeth, pause.
Yeah.
Now get dressed, then do the next thing. Because if you give him upstairs and get ready for school, that's too vague. It's too broad.
Yeah,
it's too vague.
Okay, yeah. At the same time, it's just a mystery to me, probably many parents too, that you say, and yeah, it's a matter of seconds where they go and do this very specific thing. And as soon as they're out of your eye line, you know, they're staring at the ceiling.
You know
they're,
what?
You know, oh, look, there's a thing.
But it's
on the
not
wall.
Interesting.
No, that's
you
true.
Know, going to brush my teeth isn't as interesting as sneaking in an extra chapter of my book.
Yeah.
So if I'm 8, I'm going to go with the interesting thing every time. I mean, so we can't be shocked when they're like, what do you mean you didn't embrace brushing your teeth and washing your hands and combing your hair, or getting dressed, when he's thinking just one more chapter, just the end of this page? You know how it is when you're absorbed in something. But I do think you said something really important there, that you do need to be very specific. You can't just say, get ready for school. It does need to be upstairs, do A and B, now do C and D, and we'll end with E and F and we'll all be at the door.
Yeah.
It does need to be paced in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, because I find go and find your shoes usually means I'll go into the other room and sing a song.
And a dance.
And a dance.
The song has to come with a dance.
I don't understand how one converts into the other. I'm 55 and constantly excluded from the goings-on in my family. I do not feel like a valued member of my family. I'm not told anything, particularly those things that are relevant to me. I don't feel like I belong. I'm so sad listening to this item. I listen every week and I feel particularly sad today. This came in during parenting last week. As a kind of a reaction to a question we got last week.
Yeah. There's a lot in this, isn't there? It's so short. It's just a few lines, but they're powerful.
Mm.
And the words are really, really strong in it. And it's hard to hear that and not feel sad with someone who's feeling sad about this. And I just think, you know, Sean, first when I read this snippet, I'm thinking it's your own family rather than family of origin, maybe, that's being spoken about here. But on that, our families are the first group or the first system, depending on how you look at it, that we are born into. Okay, we've no choice in it. We don't join them. We don't sign up. Yeah. We don't take out membership. But they are our first experience of group dynamics, of how systems work, for better or worse, and everything in between. That's the first. And that lays down a bit of a foundation stone for all of us. And I suppose I'm wondering how family fit has been for this person growing up. You know, in terms of sibling group, did you feel you were included? Did your siblings push you to the side? Or at least maybe they weren't doing it, but that's how it felt, if you know what I mean. And then I'm wondering, has the feeling you're holding now always been there in your family? Or is it something that has evolved over years? You know, we used to do a lot together, but in the last 10 years, I'm just feeling like I'm not part of what's going on with everyone else. And then, you know, it's really important to be honest with yourself about how do you express curiosity? How do you show interest to other people in your life? And it's not always a case of, well, nobody includes me. What are we doing to insert ourselves into the activity of family life and people's goings on? And, you know, what might be a reason that they're keeping stuff from you? Sometimes, you know, I think families can feel, oh, well, we won't tell so-and-so this because we know how they're going to react, so just don't tell them. And that's it's rarely fair, to be honest with you, because we don't know how somebody's going to react. We're basing that off maybe one time that they reacted in a particular way. And even if somebody is going to, as we perceive it, overreact or underreact, depending on the situation, they're entitled to be part of the family. Everyone has a role to play.
Yeah.
So I think there's something that just feels like an isolation in this, that this person is feeling isolated. We don't know, did you isolate yourself? Were you isolated? But where do you go from here with this? I would encourage you to speak up, you know, speak out about it, name it, say you want to, you know, be part of the family. You want to be included in experiences, in decisions, in choices, in challenges, whatever is going on. You want to be a part of it, and that you're coming with a proposal. You know, you're saying, here's what we're going to do, rather than, because you don't need permission from anyone else in the family to be included. Because otherwise you're kind of deputizing a family CEO that you need permission from to be part of discussions. But do that. If you're listening and saying, no, that's not quite it, and it's a bit more intricate and deeper than that, then if you feel I can't just speak up in the family, maybe you do need to speak out in therapy. You know, that you deserve a space where you can feel those feelings out loud and think those thoughts out loud in a very safe, supported, contained space with somebody who will support you in making sense of them and creating a deeper meaning so that you can put a plan of action in place that will enable you to make a change going forward.
Now, obviously, that strictly speaking wasn't a parenting question, but it just shows those dynamics never end, do they?
You know, I'm thinking it might have been from a piece we did last time about saying how we're always the children of our parents.
Yes, yeah.
You know, so I think that that's very true.
Yeah. Fair bit of reaction, though, to the first question. That's the 8-year-old who kind of gets distracted by things. Now, you know, at the same time, a lot of parents are going, the person isn't saying my child reads too much, because that's the best complaint ever.
Yeah.
Sounds like this child is an artist. He'll be fine. Ha ha. From a fellow artist. What about when they're 16? Arg. I have an 18-year-old who is still like Bambi. I can still find him sitting on his bed daydreaming 20 minutes after I asked him to get his jumper. God help whoever inherits him from me. And just... So, somebody says mind map books by Tony Buzan are good for helping kids whose minds tend to wander when given tasks to do. Still works now for my 14-year-old.
Yeah, they are good. And actually the 16 and 18-year-olds parents should take note of that as well. Yeah. Actually, they can be really useful. They can be useful for any of us grown-ups too, by the way, who are prone. And there's nothing wrong with mind wandering, I have to say. Like, I love an old daydreamer, you know, because the creativity, the curiosity, the new ideas, the fresh thinking all come from giving our brains time and space to wander. So don't problematize the mind wandering. And again, I'm also a parent. I know the pressure to get out the door at a particular time and get to school. So I don't want to minimize that either.
Yes. Right. My 10-year-old daughter is developing a serious fear of the weather. We live in the West where we get lots of rain, wind, you name it, and we get it. It's only in the last few weeks she's like this. She didn't want to sleep in her own house for a while because she could hear the wind whistling around the corner of our house at night. So I let her sleep in her sister's house up the road for a few nights. She has the inside of her ears cut with her fingernails from blocking her ears. I've now resorted to leaving on a soothing music app all night to help her sleep through it. Anyway, I could go on. She's an only child and I don't want her suffering from anxiety over this. Sure, we were all nervous of thunder and lightning, but we got over it, didn't we?
Didn't we? Did we? Yeah. I mean, there's a bit in here.
Sorry, she sleeps in my sister's house, I should say. I think I misread that. Yeah, in her aunt's house. Yeah,
in her aunt's house.
Yeah.
Which sounds like it's close by and that's a nice kind of support. There's a few things in this. I mean, fear of weather is actually not as unusual as you would think it is.
Yeah.
Now, typically we have that someone is afraid of a particular weather, thunderstorms or hurricanes or rain or, you know, a very, or space or nighttime or whatever it might be. There's very particular. This is about a serious fear of weather. But I'm wondering, is it the weather or is it the sound of the weather? As in, is this an auditory sensitivity? Because there's something about her having her, her ears are cut from putting her fingers in her ears. And she needed to get out of the house where it was quieter rather than, because the weather is the same in her aunt's house, I imagine, unless it's very far away.
Well, but say it could be just that it's a particularly windy
Location
and there and half
absolutely.
A mile up the road, not
and,
so
you know,
much.
To be fair to the child, you know, that whistling, noisy wind can be very scary. It can sound very creepy and eerie and it can stir up all kinds of thoughts. So kind of looking at this, it's so interesting, though, about weather, because it is something I see and hear more of in clinical work, because children are so much more aware of climate change, of increased severe weather events globally. They're seeing the reporting of it. And I have more weather conversations with children in the recent years than I would have had 5-10 years ago ever. You know, so even without it being a phobia, it is something that can be very fear-inducing, anxiety-provoking for children. And again, it's very hard to say, oh, don't be worried about that, because that's just not a truth. There is cause to worry. I have found a book. It's an Usborne book. I can't think of the individual authors, but it's in the Usborne range, so that would find it. It's the Weather and Climate book. I mean, it literally does what it says on the tin.
Okay.
It really is a book about weather and climate. It's a Lift the Flap book, but don't confuse that with it being for much younger children, because it's really interesting. There's a lot of factual information. There's positive reframing. It's about actions that can be taken. It's a nice book. And they have a few in that range, so it's worth looking at, because I think actually getting to understand weather and its sounds and its noises and how it works can be reassuring if it is about the weather.
Yeah.
If it is about the noise and the sound, then that's, you know, that child could be saying, listen, I know all about climate and weather. That's not the issue. I don't like how it sounds. Then, because I'm curious, you know, you're finding clearly, because you're doing it all night, that this soothing music app is helpful.
Yeah.
That really resonates with me about the auditory piece. And I'm wondering, is she sensitive to noise in other areas? Loud noises, sudden noises, anything like that? You could try, and again, I'm saying try because everybody's different with this, but you could try those noise cancelling or minimizing earphones. You can have ones that go over the head. You can have special ones that sit inside your ear and they don't eliminate all noise, which is a bit safer than all noise being cut out, but they do eliminate it a lot. Now, be very aware with children version of those, the ones that go in your, you need to be aware of the time limit to use them. I think it's about 90 minutes and never more than 3 hours, but it would be enough to get her to sleep.
Right,
and then
okay.
you could take them out.
Yeah.
And I would try something like that and to see if it would help her. But I'd stay curious about, is it noise? Is it weather?
Mm, yeah, that's so interesting. Just referring back to that question about the person feeling kind of left out of their family. I completely empathise with this person. I'm the youngest, affectionately called the afterthought in our family. And for as long as I can remember, I'm treated with kid gloves, even though I'm now in my late 40s.
Yeah.
It really hurts. I'm told about family news or Christmas plans long after the conversation has happened. You never stop being the baby in
those
a family.
Those dynamics, yeah, absolutely. They run very deep. And I think, and it's a lot of pressure to put on someone and say, well, you tell them that's not okay. If you've been treated like that for a lot in your sibling group, it's very hard to find your voice.
Yeah.
To actually say, hey, you guys listen to me. When actually, I've never felt like you've listened to me. So I think, you know, I think we all come from families. We know what that's like.
Yeah. Well, that's extraordinary. Our almost three-year-old, oh, here we go, our almost three-year-old has just moved out of his cot and into his new big boy bed. He started climbing over the bars of the cot and had fallen twice, so we knew it was time. However, the last 3 weeks have been a disaster. He's too excited every night getting into bed, and therefore it takes at least an hour to get him asleep with stories, hand-holding, singing songs, and eventually he nods off. Then, if he stirs at all in his sleep, usually between 2 and 4 in the morning, and eventually, between two and four in the morning, he realises he's not in the cot and takes the opportunity to get out of bed, run into our room shouting delightedly, "Hi, Mammy," or worse. He toddles downstairs, setting the alarm off and waking the whole house and possibly our neighbours. His disrupted sleep patterns mean his own behaviour has deteriorated during the day and his naps have pretty much stopped because he gets up to the same antics at nap time. I can tell he knows that he shouldn't be getting out of bed, but I also know he's a toddler and he struggles to stop himself doing something that seems fun and new and exciting. How can I get him into better and consistent sleep habits? When he was in his cot, he was a dream to put to bed. It took all of 10 minutes and he slept through the night until 7:30 a.m. or 8 a.m. So you can see how this has been a bit of a shock to us. I imagine it has. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, you know, be aware, he's almost three. He is at an age where it's not unusual to see sleep regression developmentally. Yeah, yeah. So we may be looking at correlation rather than causation in terms of the cot's gone and now we've got this sleep. He was already showing you some disruption from sleep and how he was able to climb out of the cot. He was waking up. He was no longer willing to lie there and wait. And, you know, congratulations, you've done really well with that kind of a sleep pattern for so long. But, you know, it is exciting. I think you're right, by the way. I love this bit where you say, I can tell he knows he shouldn't be getting out of bed. I'd love to know how you know that. how do you know he knows? Or is he just saying, but actually in his head going, not a hope. Yeah. Don't know what you're talking about. Before going to bed, this is really about establishing a new sleep routine. You have to, I'm sorry to say it, let go of the one that was a beautiful dream for you all, because he's not in that sleep environment anymore. There's new circumstances. He hasn't adjusted as well to it. And you're going to have to set up a new sleep routine that is around his bed. Like, you can ensure for certain there's quiet play time. So he's not getting super excited going in. You can minimize, eliminate if you want, but certainly minimize how many busy toys are in his bedroom. So he's associating his bedroom with a place of rest rather than having the crack.
Yeah.
You know, because he's like, well, I'm going to get up and play and make noise. If you can, maybe you've already done this, but if there's a blanket from his old cot that you could put onto the new bed with him, just so there is an association of, that place I used to cuddle up and rest all night with. And do try saying goodnight to him with clear expectations. Like, goodnight, I will come in when it's time to get up.
Yes.
And don't make a song and dance over it, but just be clear in what you've said. You could consider getting a grow clock, by the way, where he would look at it and it's either in the sunshine, get out of bedtime, or it's in the moon time, stay in your bedtime.
Yeah.
And he might respond well to that, because you do say that you think he knows he shouldn't be getting out. But children don't know the time. He doesn't know it's between 2 and 4 a.m.
Yes. Yeah.
So if he has something that's a visual that says, oh, it's still stay in bedtime, that could work. In the meantime, you might consider getting, I'm going to say, bed rail, bed barrier. You know those things you can slide in under the mattress, and you could make sure one side of the bed is against the wall. And you could put one, even two of those, because they only go halfway, I think, down the bed for him. Not to keep him in the bed, but just to give him that association of, containment that he made. Because you're saying the cot was great, but creating that piece of just putting that in again. These may not work because he's now a different age. He's a different stage of development. Things have shifted a gear, and they don't stay those great sleepers, some of them, all the time. I think he has to learn, though, how to stay in his own bed. And when he comes into you, depends on what you're doing, because you don't mention that. What do you do at between two and four? Mm. You might gently stir him back to his own bed. You might say, oh my God, just get in here and be quiet so everyone can go to sleep. Whatever you do, be clear about it. If you're thinking, no, I want him back in his own bed, you got to get up. You got to bring him back to his bed, tuck him in, settle him. Wait, don't speak and engage. Don't get into the chats. Hi, mommy, how's it going? Like, that's just going to wake him totally up. Get him back asleep and leave. So you're the one who's going to have disrupted sleep while you try to reestablish a routine. But that is essentially what you're doing. You're trying to set a new sleep routine.
Yeah. So it's not, because I suppose that what the association people make is because he can get out of the bed, he will get out of the bed.
I mean, he was doing it with the cot, though.
Anyway,
he's in the bed is because he was climbing over the side of the cot.
Yeah.
So a part of me is thinking it's developmental, that he was getting to an age where I've changed how I'm going to sleep, guys.
Yeah.
I know. And, you know, I always think with sleep, it is parental wants clashing with children's needs. We want them to stay asleep till 7 or 8 in the morning. We don't want them getting up, but they need to see, are we still there? The nighttime is very long for him.
Mm.
And he's waking in that burst of, depending on when he goes to bed, he's had a chunk of sleep. Not enough, just to say that.
Yeah.
He's had a chunk of sleep and he's like, all right, I have second wind now. What can we do? You know? So I think you've got to recreate the room as a place of rest and not exciting, because it's affecting naps as well. Because you're saying it's the same antics, but he's clearly not staying in his bed at nap time either.
Mm. So, but like when he wakes up in, 2 o'clock in the morning, should you kind of, I mean, apart from trying to inculcate in him a sense that this is a place where I'm supposed to rest, is it advisable to leave teddies around or toys around even entertain himself in there?
Absolutely, because if he's going to stay in his bed and he has something to cuddle or snuggle up to, he might fall back asleep himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And as well, even with the grow clock, if he's awake and it's not 2 in the morning, maybe it's more like 6 in the morning or 6:30. If he has a little teddy to chat to in the bed, he's less likely to come in and decide you're the one who's going to chat with him. But I mean, the coming down the stairs and setting the alarm off.
That's classic. I mean,
it's easy for us to laugh because it's not happening with us.
No, it's not. It is easy for us to laugh. But one day you'll deliver that at his speech, at his wedding, and embarrass him with it.
Absolutely.
Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m.
with Energlaze
on News Talk.